We have quite a few new folks, or people at least that I haven't met here this morning. So just to give you a bit more about who I'm going to be mentioning in my sermon this morning, my wife is Tara, and we have two young boys, a three-year-old, almost three-year-old Tobias, and almost five-month-old Malcolm. And shortly after Malcolm was born is where I want to invite us all into. This time that was tender and beautiful, and many gifts came from many places. Some were surprises and others were expected, including this one package that we received in the mail from my aunt, my mother's sister. I knew what it was before slicing open the tape, before unfolding the creases of the box, before laying out this soft blue blanket with my son's name and birth date stitched in it. It was a replica of the gift she had sent for Tobias's birth and for each of my nieces and nephews. But still, it surprised me, the softness of the cloth and the way those letters wrote out his name, seeing the date of his birth. The stories of those hours rushed back to me, and it was as if this blanket told some sacred secret right in front of me. Harsh as it may sound, I detest those threads. Each and every one, and how together that blanket they make me feel. You see, my aunt does not love me. Not without an asterisk, a qualifier, an erasure of the rest of my family. Her religion has taught her that who I am and how I love and what I represent to the world is both ugly and false. And though the soft threads and stitched letters that arrived at my doorstep those early days after my sweet babe was born shouldn't be blamed, I cannot help but see those judgments, the stripping of my worth, the false claims of love needled into the small, delicate spaces of that blanket. And I refuse to wrap my child in this. So I packaged the blanket up, zipped it tight as if to suffocate those feelings, and put both Malcolm's and Tobias's matching blankets into a bin to give away. This, the blanket, my aunt, my shame in needing to exercise it all, is all I could think of this past June when at the question box service, one of you asked how we can possibly reconcile our first Unitarian Universalist principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and the ways in which some people or organizations do harm. I answered on my feet, as that service requires, and gave some quick response about wishing not to make characters of people, how I did not want to reduce any one of us to our worst behaviors and didn't want to shut down the possibility of change or the sacred exchange that comes with curiosity. All of this is true. But you see, by June, by that time of that service, I had already packaged up those blankets and written in my head some 1,000 times choice poetry for my extended family that I assure you was neither curious nor open to change. I was living those same questions, wrestling the same demons, family members and faces on the TV. It was all the same small cuts and atrocities that challenged my belief in universalism. I gave you all an answer I believed in, but could not practice myself. For visitors and newcomers, you must come to find out that this faith of Unitarian Universalism is grounded in this life. We are striving to build a beloved community, not for some other world or for eternity, but here on earth and with these people, as in these in this room, but also stranger who we bump into, and unimagined foe. We are guided by principles that hold us accountable to the people we want to be in this effort, the way we want to move through the world, and how we can imagine our connection that is both tangible and holy. Our first and seventh tend to be the most well-known principles. We covenant, we promise as an expression of a sacred exchange to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of all people, as well as the interdependence of which we are all a part. Yes, there are pitfalls, of course. Banter ensues with anyone who wishes to take this on. Hitler has inherent worth. I've had that conversation too many times. We should treat bin Laden with dignity. We are connected to that spider, Kim, you just flushed down the drain. And I'll tell you, the quick, though not easy, responses to these are yes, yes, and yes. We are not foolish nor ignorant to the pain of the world. Partnered with these ideals is a recognition of the erosion of the soul of the person, the harm we each inflict on one another. We may not believe in damnation, but we certainly understand hell and how it can exist here and now. That we can create this hell for others, and that we can be saved from it by the works of others for us. In these principles, we are speaking about a world we are striving for, dreaming of, tending the fields of our lives to make real. As Aurora Levins Morales has written, imagine every detail, the exact smell of the summer streets in which no one has been shot. The muscles you have never unclenched from worry, gone soft as newborn skin. The sparkling taste of food when we know that no one on earth is hungry, that the beggars are fed, that the old man under the bridge and the woman wrapping herself in thin sheets in the back of a car, and the children who suck on stones, nest under a flock of roofs that keep multiplying their shelter. Lean with all your being towards that day when the poor of the world shake down a rain of good fortune out of the heavy clouds and justice rolls down like waters. That's hard to imagine. Hard to even make into poetry because it can feel foolhardy in its far awayness. I like Luis Alberto Urrea's vision better. We evolve into just enjoying each other more. It keeps me up at night. How far away we are from it all. How far away I am from making some small version of this possible in my own heart, in my own world. My aunt, the one who sent the blanket I cannot, will not wrap my child in. Her laughter, her warmth, her Long Island accent, the features she shares with my mother and her sisters and my grandmother, these are things I can recall as easily as the smell of my childhood home. As a child, I would sit at the top of the stairs, supposed to be sleeping, and listen to the sounds of the raucous joy of my mother's siblings as they would fill the kitchen with laughter. Sounds that let me learn and feel things about my parents I couldn't have otherwise. I wish I could hold on to only those truths, the good parts, the beautiful anecdotes that would make me enjoy her and my family and my larger human family more. But the pain of not being chosen cannot be underestimated. And so, like a shield against a darting arrow, defensive and unmovable, I do not choose her. Time and again, I do not choose her so that it does not hurt, but becomes thoughtless, habit, no longer a loss, but just simply a matter of fact. And And so it is in many ways these days, the wound that opens when we learn again the depth of disregard for power, the abuse of children, the indifference for our earth, and on it goes. We retreat further from one another, for it is too painful, too risky to not see ourselves in the kin of the world, too painful to fear one another, too painful to not be chosen, and perhaps more painful still, to know that we would not, do not choose them. Parker Palmer writes, "Violence is what happens when we don't know what else to do with our suffering." Violence is not limited to inflicting physical harm, he continues. We do violence every time we violate the sanctity of the human self, our own or another person's. Sometimes we try to numb the pain of suffering in ways that dishonor our souls. We turn to noise and frenzy, nonstop work, or substance abuse that only deepen our suffering. Sometimes we visit violence upon others, as if causing them pain would mitigate our own. It keeps me up at night to know how far we are, how far I am from making the details of that beloved community become real, to think of the ways in which we are dishonoring our souls as we build protective barriers against one another, walls, borders, violence of all kinds. But can I tell you something? Before today, before you, whoever you are who asked that question box question, took seriously that our faith might answer to this pain, to this suffering that is collective, that may one day draw us back together, until you took seriously that there may be some answer within these principles that so many disregard, took seriously what I could not harbor on myself. I could not have remembered my aunt's laughter or the way she pulled laughter from me. I would not have bothered to give credit to ways her faith drew her into the world to serve well. Even if the blanket goes into the bin, which it will, it is, as Hannah said to me this week, the door is closed, but what I can say is that there is still a door. It has become harder to simplify, to categorize, to dismiss just one more person. One more person in this world, in this web, who I believe we not only need, but who I believe you and I are inextricably bound up with. Inextricably. Unable to untether, unwind, separate from, choose them or not, we are bound up together. And what damage to the spirit, dishonoring of the soul, to yours, to theirs, might occur if we are to keep pretending like we don't inhabit this life and legacy together. Inextricably, even if the blanket goes in the bin. You've heard me preach on this Jewish story before, how in the beginning there was only the holy darkness, the source of life. And then in the course of history, at a moment in time, this world, the world of 1,000,000 things, as Rachel Naomi Remen retells it, emerged from the heart of the holy darkness as a great ray of light. But then an accident. And vessels containing the light of the world, the wholeness of the world, broke. And the wholeness of the world, the light of the world, was scattered into 1,000,000 fragments of light. And they fell into all events and all people, where they remain deeply hidden until this very day. The whole human race is a response to this accident, the Jewish tale tells us. We are here because we are born with the capacity to find the hidden light in all events and all people, to lift it up and make it visible once again, and thereby to restore the innate, the inherent wholeness of the world. It's a very important story for our times. And this task, she tells us, is called Tikkun Olam in Hebrew. It is the restoration of the world. I cannot choose each actor in the pain of the world to love, nor can I always find the want to mine my way to their light. But today, I am reminded of the spiritual discipline, the spiritual sweat that is required to see how we share a deep and tender truth. We are each suffering, and that is enough for me today to want to try to love, or at the very least be curious about, without asterisk or qualifier, those I can. May it be so, and may the evolution of enjoying each other more be made more real today because of you and me. Amen.